Discussions with Ajahn Suchin in Bangkok, August 2019. Recorded and edited by Jonathan and Sarah. Speakers include Betty, Sarah, Suchin, Roti, Sundra, Jonathan, Alberto, L, Peter, Meta, Trin, Mao, Hung, and Hoon.
They were just talking about what instinct means in Dhamma terms. Apparently we all have different ideas as what instinct really is. The scientific definition of instinct is bodily actions that are done without any thought. They're automatic, like lower level animals do behavior through instinct, so that there's no thought involved in it. It's not something that's deliberately done. It's an automatic thing that the body, for instance, blinking your eyes. You don't think about blinking your eyes, but they blink.
If there's no citta, can there be blinking of the eyes?
No, there has to be a citta, of course. But just because there's a citta doesn't mean that there's thinking.
If it's not seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, what is it?
I don't know. That's why we're asking this question. I think it's a good question.
So then
how do you define it in terms of the scientific definition where it's an automatic response?
Well, that's because it's science, not Dhamma.
Yes, I
know, but we're asking what does this mean in Dhamma terms?
No, but that's because it's science, and science says that it's done without thinking. But we, after hearing the Dhamma, we know that the science explanation is wrong.
Well,
there must be thinking.
No, not necessarily. Is there thinking?
Yes.
There's citta and jetasika for sure. But for instance, say blinking your eye or digesting in your stomach.
It's not thinking in words, but thinking nevertheless. It's citta with vitaka vichara.
Yeah. Okay, so we can conclude then that there is an aspect of mind, but it's not apparent to us.
It's not thinking in words. Thinking happens even when it words, it takes time to form words. So there are many levels of thinking.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. So this is thing. For instance, all those automatic responses that the body does. Granted, we know, but it happens. I mean, blinking takes place, digesting the food in the stomach takes place. In terms of conventional thought, I mean, that's what those things happen, and there's no thought about it. But he's saying that there's thought without words.
Digestion is not called instinct. Blinking the eyes is, because there's lobha behind that. I think what is called instinct is the roots, actually, like lobha, like for instance the instincts of survival, right?
Okay, that's another definition of instinct. That's another definition of instinct.
It's the same thing, because if you blink your eyes, it's for survival at the end.
It happens on a regular basis throughout the day. There's no survival involved with it.
Well, it's the survival of the eyes.
Well, it keeps the eyes moist, let's put it that way.
It's conventional terms, but we know that in reality, whenever there is no seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, and touching, there is thinking. And we also know that vitaka arises,
for instance,
with almost every citta other than seeing, hearing, smelling,
tasting, and touching. But how do you explain the fact that when none of those processes are taking place, and say you're fast asleep, say the what we call the body is fast asleep,
yep,
and none of those processes are taking place.
But that's not instinct.
The blood is still moving, circulating, all
these things
are
happening. That's not instinct. That's not instinct. That's not what is in science is defined as is instinct. The bodily functions is not defined as instinct.
So what are they defined as?
We know in that case, we know the rupas or the body can be conditioned by citta, like the example Suchin gave,
yes,
by karma,
yes,
by temperature or
yes,
nutriments.
Oh,
so even when fast asleep, the rupas conditioned by nutriments.
Right.
It doesn't matter by temperature. Or
yeah.
It doesn't matter what it's called. But actually, they're just different dharmas arising by different conditions.
Right. So instinct would be, or what you call instinct.
Instinct is like, for example, avoiding pain and having an inclination for pleasure.
All right. That, in that particular case, with that definition, it's definitely thought. Absolutely.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's no, I don't think science says that instinct is without thought. It just says that there are things, yeah, in a way they're automatic, but some kind of...
John, what do you think about that? Sure.
What is meant by automatic?
Automatic is just instinctual response, usually, when we talk about automatic.
No dharma? Or what is it? The nature of instinct?
It has to be a reality, but I'm
not
sure.
What kind of reality?
Well, it could be anything.
No.
I think it's lobha, moha, and dosa.
Can, because can the table do anything?
No.
So, otherwise we do not study the truth of whatever it is. Without citta, can anyone blink?
No.
And Roki, according to what you're saying, then an arahata doesn't blink?
No. Well, oh, because you mean because of
sure?
He has no lobha, right? Right.
But there must be citta and cetasika for sure.
Yeah, but I think that the arahat is free of instinct in that sense.
So what is instinct?
I think instinct is lobha, dosa, and moha, which makes you act without knowing, right? Like looking for pleasure and avoiding pain.
What motive your thought and idea and speaking right now? What motivate? We use the term santati, santana. Santana, what is santana?
That's a stream of consciousness, yeah, santana.
One citta, or the collection of many reality, citta and cetasika, from the past up to now.
That is motivating me too.
That is in sync. If there's no accumulation of...
Accumulation, exactly.
Yeah, there's no instinct.
Yeah, exactly.
Otherwise, conditioned cheetahs and cetasikas.
So the question is whether arahata has the accumulation of instinct or not.
Yes, santana.
Mm-hmm. Santana.
But I think the arahata does not have any more. Instinct is eradicated.
But all arahatas are not the same. They are different. Thinking different. Speaking is different. According to santana of each of them, makes it indifferent.
Like
each moment.
Like the one who skipped puddles.
Again, that's not instinct, that's like the personality in that case.
So there may still be blinking by habit, by past habit,
no,
even though
not habit.
Even though
the way
habit,
they jump is different.
By vasana, by habit, even though no more attachment, but just there is that habit. But we're talking about the arahat. So whatever you call it, there is still that habit.
But I don't think it's...
All arahatas the same?
No.
Different habits, different accumulations.
But they are the same in the sense that all of them
yes.
have eradicated ignorance.
What about
ignorance?
The other? Asiya, nusaya. Not only anusaya, but there is also asiya.
Right, that's mm-hmm. different, yeah.
Someone may have a twitch.
But I think eradicating desire...
Only anusaya, not asiya.
Right.
No more desire, but there's still that habit, like,
right.
even though no lobha.
I mean, like I'm quick to pick the microphone. Some of you are not. And that doesn't show that I have lobha and that other person doesn't have lobha.
Yeah, but I don't think that's instinct again.
That's controversial.
That has to do with your personality, habit.
Right, but it doesn't just start out of the blue. It starts our accumulated tendency.
But I think instinct is like, for instance, the desire for existence. That is very, very deep. The arahat has extinguished. He's not existing anymore after death. I think that's the root of instinct. Yeah, of course, desire.
There may be the instinct to help.
The instinct of all animals is to exist, to avoid pleasure,
certain behaviors or whatever that animals do that do not require the animal to... that are conditioned by citta and cetasika, but are not...
Well, tell me about one behavior that has nothing to do with looking for pleasure, avoiding pain.
What about the instinct to help, like some people, if they see an insect suffering, there's the instinct to help that
insect to move it straight away.
That's not
like
an
to. Well, it depends how you define it. It's just thinking that's conditioned unexpectedly at that moment.
Yeah, so I think it's habit. At the end, it's habit, because there's nothing other than habit. Habit.
And talking about habits, Ajahn, I mentioned that we met our Polish friend in London, and he has a couple of questions for you. And I mentioned that he has a bad habit, drinking. And these are his questions. The first one is, which he particularly would like to hear your answer on. It's impossible to study Dharma and to develop understanding while drinking every day. I think one needs to fully resign from drinking alcohol first to study the Dharma. Would you give a reply?
What about not drinking, but other desire or attachment to other things?
Yes.
Not drinking. For us, we don't have that habit. But we still have attachment to other things, which is not drinking.
Like there may be a lot of attachment to the food we're eating or anything to the visible objects now. Mm. And the other point that I mentioned to him is it sounds like an excuse for putting off because there isn't drinking all the time, but even now there can be
awareness. I think that it depends on what understanding level. If there is more understanding, one can see the danger of all akusala, not just only thinking.
Right, all and kinds.
So, kama chanta is an obstacle for developing understanding?
But it depends on right understanding. Mm. Everything can hinder the attachment to arise, but it depends on not self, but by understanding. Mm.
But I do notice that when there's strong attachment to things, it just conditions more and more.
We don't know, because we cannot understand the depth and the accumulation, santana.
And there's that very famous example on the Dhammapada with Santati, who was drunk and cavorting in the senses, we can say, and the Buddha saw him and he said, this very day, that person will become arahat. So I think what you're alluding to before is that it's certainly not a skillful habit, but it doesn't preclude the development of understanding.
And the point is, whatever arises now is conditioned. So if there are conditions now for that state, actually understanding can understand any time depending on conditions. Otherwise, it's like thinking about another time or thinking I can't study Dhamma because later I will be drunk. But as you say, even we read about the examples of people who became enlightened with alcohol on their breath. So it just depends on conditions at this moment.
Actually, it sounds something like meditation. That's what the meditators say. We need particular conditions for.
In fact, that comes on to his, well, another question. But this third one I'll bring in now. He's very interested, I mentioned to Roti, in Ajahn Neb's book, and he says it's about Vipassana meditation and a good introduction on Abhidharma, and he likes it very much. And one of the students said she was an Aryan in the introduction and how it's very good for beginners, and talking about Abhidharma and sitting meditation and allowing the mind to realize dukkha is out of control and impermanent. Do you have any comments?
Is there any understanding of reality right now?
Right. That's the point. It's again putting it off and thinking of a place and a time and a situation. And the third question is, also in the Vibhanga on khandhas, the Buddha mentions about dharmas as gross or subtle, each khanda gross or subtle. What if this is really being drunk and unaware as gross? Then in that case, I don't see any point to consider dharma or as dharma, because this in this kusala mind that's so gross that is drunk, understanding or kusala cannot be developed. I don't understand the gross and subtle in that section.
He doesn't rely on understanding, that he can understand anything at any time.
It's lack of confidence in understanding.
Yeah. What about give up the habits of drinking, but no understanding at all?
Mm-hmm.
And what about understanding, what level of understanding is? Now, this moment is like a test, how much understanding of reality right now.
So, Achan, actually, even when we're not drunk, we don't know understanding when it arises, following mm-hmm. what kind of akusla or kusla, at what level. So it's the same chitta-chetasikas. If there's accumulation, it can arise any time.
And no one knows it now. It is chitta-chetasika and rupa. So what about giving up things with the idea of self?
Actually, if we talk about, in the ultimate sense, about what is sober and not sober, only moments of kusala are sober. So actually mm-hmm. there is an addiction at every moment that a kusala arises. And the most dangerous addiction is the addiction to the wrong idea of self. So regardless of whether one drinks or not, one is drunk with that idea of I who can control or make things happen or stop drinking or being aware.
Yeah, I was
interesting you label it as an addiction. It is, and in a sense it is.
Yeah, I was thinking of that too, you know, the addiction to the senses that we have, to seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching. It's a very strong.
When there's no understanding, one thinks a lot about everything, even just trying to have such and such habits, try to be good and have kusala dhamma, but no understanding. It's impossible to understand reality right now. As no self, no one at all.
And it sounds like if you start making these kind of excuses with the idea of self, there can be addiction to that.
Mm-hmm. Very much. Much more than drinking, because it's always there.
And on the topic of just trying to be good rather than understanding with detachment, another friend in London mentioned that he considers the purpose of more understanding is because it leads to more happiness and to have more happiness. So this is quite common, that people think the purpose of understanding is to have more happiness. And when I mentioned that actually it's to be just for the sake of understanding, to be detached from what's conditioned now, not in order to have happiness or better person. But he mentioned that on a recording you say that when we understand the cause of suffering, there will be less, there will be more happiness. But this is like a consequence, but it's not the purpose of understanding or the purpose of studying. Would you say a little bit more about the idea that understanding is for having more happiness?
They don't understand the point of understanding Dhamma, so they just wish or looking for happiness without understanding that it's not self. The most important thing is that to understand reality as not self from the very beginning. Otherwise, it's always I who have such and such understanding.
And it's for me, for mm-hmm. my future, yeah. for my kusala, for my goodness, so that I have less unwholesomeness, less addictions.
Also, I am going to be happy also, right?
No understanding. Just want to be happy.
And on the point about Ajahn Neb and the meditation, this is to bring Roti in. We had a discussion about the teaching about the idea that there's a quiet place is better for identifying motives and for physical seclusion for the teaching or for the higher life. Would that the point. So this is quite a common idea that many people have, that a quiet place is a kind of viveka and it's more suitable for studying the teachings.
I think Ajahn Neb used to say that if we were in daily life, we couldn't see the real motives, the real reasons why we do things.
I think that no matter who said it, the truth is the truth. So now, is it truth? Is it true now? Is it reality, not self now? They don't mind. They just want to have quiet place, wishing for something that they'd like to get, like understanding. Can the quiet place bring the understanding? Not at all. So why go there?
And also, the path taught by the Buddha is the understanding of any reality that appears. It's not about understanding why we do things necessarily. So any reality that is appearing can be understood, and that is the path. Some people think that one needs to understand particularly one's unwholesome mental states, or to see them more clearly as a way of somehow perhaps eradicating them. But this is not correct. In time, the understanding of realities, whether it's nama or rupa, helps the lessening of the kilesas by itself, not by, as it were, targeting unwholesome mental states particularly to be the object of understanding.
And I think the comment about seclusion and viveka, it's quite a common idea. We were discussing about that kaya viveka just refers to physical seclusion, but actually any kind of viveka has to be citta. It has to be the citta which is secluded or alone, because otherwise if one's just in a quiet place but without any understanding, actually there's no seclusion at all. But this is the idea that was common before the Buddha taught, and that's why he used the same words like viveka, because people had the idea before that the forest, the quiet place, living alone, was seclusion. But what he taught was actually it's referring to the mental state. Or even kaya viveka has to refer to the mental seclusion, even if one is in the quiet place. You're not quite sure about this?
No.
Does that make sense?
Acharya, why is the chetasikas being referred to as kaya?
Kaya means not just one, only one. The body composed of many, many rupa. So kaya is the point or the place that all dhammas are there. For example, Mahabuddha rupa here, if we scattered each one, there is no self. So in order to really understand the nature of Dhamma, it has to be understanding that actually there is nothing. If there is no arising of Dhamma, see, and when it's gone, no one there. But the other reality arises, succeeded the past one. Actually, that arises in false way. Can it be more than that? Nothing at all. After it has fallen away, each moment is nothing. So there is no I.
So, Chan, even with this kaya is not just talking about one rupa, but many rupas.
With akasa in between each kalapa.
And it is the understanding that actually there are no people in reality, no alone or with crowds, because there are just dharmas arising and falling away. It is citta viveka, understanding that this is real seclusion, which leads to upadi viveka.
As long as one reality does not appear as it is, there is no way to let go the idea of self. Because they arise together, they appear together as something.
Can one say this Kaya is the same meaning as in the Satipatthana Sutta when referring to rupas taken for body?
The truth is the truth. The matter is about Vinaya or Sutta or Abhidhamma.
Whatever it is, yes. Yes. So it's just the different rupas which are taken for something.
And also there is Namakaya, Citta and Chetasika arise together.
This is another kind.
Yes.
Deep.
That's why we learn to understand each one as it is. Citta cannot be chetasika. So when whatever appears, there is no thinking about whether it is citta or chetasika, but the characteristic of reality appear. Like dosa, lopa, cannot be self or I, and lopa and dosa cannot be citta. The understanding developed so straightforward that it doesn't mix at all. Can citta be chetasika? At this moment, when there is citta anupassana satipatthana, the characteristic which experiences right now appear as not lopa, dosa, and moha. So we understand the difference between citta and chetasika, not by study words, but the characteristic appears as it is. Because when there is the understanding of citta, there is no cetasika appear. Just one characteristic at a time.
An example of that would be understanding of, say, seeing or hearing.
Any moment. Yeah. Because we don't talk about the object which is seen and heard, but that characteristic which experiences.
Right. When there's awareness of, say, seeing or hearing, no jetta-seeker appears.
They cannot appear together.
They cannot appear. And Achana, I also heard in one of your Thai talks about citta being understood by way of understanding all kinds of citta.
Because they are all the same, the characteristic which experiences.
Another point, getting back to the point about motives or reasons, which we discussed about, was the idea which some teachers, like the one we mentioned, teach about, that the reason we move or why there's any bodily posture is to relieve bodily dukkha. And this is quite an important idea, but I don't know what the point of thinking like this is, why one needs to find a motive or purpose for moving, and doesn't that motive change all the time?
And isn't it a kind of selecting an object for study?
Sarah's talking about knowing the reason why you move.
So I know, see, no understanding of reality as not self.
And I think if this is coming from Acharya, then what I understand is that it's her misunderstanding of what dukkha really is. She thinks that this is how you come to understand the characteristic of dukkha, by knowing why you move. Because this is just one of the three meanings of dukkha, the bodily unpleasant feeling. So it's not the truth, the noble truth of dukkha that's being referred to. So when it's like if you want to know why you change objects of interest from unpleasant to pleasant, it's similar thing.
Yeah, but she talks specifically about dukkha vedana. That's why, that's what's forcing you to move.
And what is the first noble truth? Only dukkha vedana.
No.
See, so she's very keen in Abhidhamma, but she doesn't understand the nature of Dhamma. Otherwise, she wouldn't say like that, because there is the word sappa prinya, which means that understanding whatever appears as no self, in order to condition the first vipassana jnana, to experience directly, just one at a time. By conditions, not by I try so very hard to experience that. If one thinks that, no understanding of anattaness at all.
Jan mentioned sapa parinja.
Understanding whatever appears now as not self.
Sapa.
No exception. Sapa.
Sapa.
I think it came up in the hospital talks.
Yeah.
If there is doubt about whether this is self or not, or I, that is not understanding reality.
So choosing an object reflects that there is no sapa parinya.
And sapa parinya is just one thing. Whenever, whatever, wherever, whatever is there, sati can be aware as understanding that is not self. Even from understanding of thinking, which will lead to more firm understanding later.
And I think this is a very important point, whatever appears. Otherwise there's a selection of some kind or other. There is a directing of one's attention or attempt to direct awareness to be aware of particular objects. And that is not the sapa parinya.
A self that is arranging things.
Yeah, really.
And in that regard, we also mentioned about the common ideas about observing or being aware of postures, and you quoted from the Satipatthana Sutta, so people have ideas of being aware of standing or moving or sitting, and we discussed how these are ideas, not realities. So now, can there be any awareness of sitting, for example?
No.
No. Because?
Because there is no sitting.
Right. Because it's just an idea.
Right.
So, sitting is what?
Sitting is a concept.
No reality at all.
But in terms of the sitting itself is concept because no reality sits. If we talk about intention to sit, then we're talking about a citta.
No understanding of rupa.
The point is, if there are no rupas, there couldn't be that idea of sitting or standing. So there must be rupas. So when referring to sitting or standing, actually it's pointing to the rupas which are taken to be sitting or standing. So there can be understanding of the rupas. So, and we can call it sitting or standing for shorthand, like we may talk about the body or breath for shorthand, but in reality there are different rupas that are taken for the body or breath or sitting or standing.
And the first Ariya Satya is not sitting, it's dukkha. Or dhammas are dukkha. Because they arise and fall away, no one can stop the way it is. So is there dukkha now? See? What is that? Sitting or what?
There is dukkha with an
now. Only?
No. But that's the only one I'm aware of right now.
Sitting.
No, the dukkha vedana.
Seeing, the hearing, everything is dukkha.
Yeah, but I'm not aware of that.
What about seeing?
I mean, I know seeing is dukkha, but I cannot see it naturally as dukkha.
Yeah.
And so your dukkha vedana, are you seeing it as dukkha?
As dukkha vedana.
So you select knowingly.
No, I'm not selecting, Ajahn.
Why not? When it's not right understanding, it is I who select to be aware of sitting.
Oh yes, but now Ajahn asked me if there is dukkha now. So the only dukkha I can experience now is
what like, moment is dukkha?
Then the moment.
Yeah. What moment is dukkha? See, so you cannot say that you are aware of dukkha. Even vedana is there, but no understanding of it.
Right.
This also answers the question about instinct. So,
in which sense?
Yeah, what Ajahn just said, the idea that all dhammas are, we don't have the understanding of the First Noble Truth, that all dhammas are dukkha, so that when we talk about instinct, there's not an understanding of instinct.
the instinct of taking realities for self.
Yes.
And we'll keep on going.
And the habit. And the habit of just thinking of Vedana, for example, sitting or Vedana.
But here I think
it seems there's no selecting, but there is that habit. There is the habit of observing or being aware of Vedana. So it's not actually the understanding and detachment of whatever's conditioned, because there's actually that focusing on Vedana or focusing on relieving bodily dukkha when moving. So those ideas that one's heard from a long time ago that one thinks one doesn't have, but still it's ingrained. That's why I'm bringing it up.
But even if it's not some idea that we've accumulated, but just the fact that there is seeing, there is hearing, there is a lot of dhammas that are arising, why pick on that Vedana?
Yeah.
Right?
Because of
ingrained instruction that you have.
If there have been so many years or perhaps decades of thinking in terms of dukkha vedana, then it seems like it just appears naturally, which in a sense is correct, but one's unable to appreciate that it's a habit of wrong practice that has to be seen as such.
And that's why I'm bringing up these points, because if it's not brought up and questioned, one doesn't realize the wrong practice that is happening, even in the middle of a Dharma discussion. Like another friend who had listened to us for quite a long time and come to many sessions told us that actually for a long time he was still following his practice and focusing on Vedana, but kidded himself that it was just because he enjoyed it, like we enjoy swimming or other people enjoy going shopping. But actually that old habit of wrong view, conditioning, wrong practice still arises. So it needs to one needs to keep questioning and considering.
Yeah, exactly. Because it's almost like when a wrong view of practice becomes instinct, right?
And if
I'm using it as habit. But I have a very interesting question about habit and instinct. Because Ajahn just mentioned the instinct of taking things as self, right? So can we say that taking things for self is a habit?
And not only that.
Huh?
Not only that.
What else?
You don't have just one habit.
Oh.
Whatever.
But it's a habit.
So that's the meaning of Pakatupanisyapate.
Right.
But
the way of thinking now, the way of what one likes, what one considers useful, it's all by habit, by this condition.
Yes, but I think there's something interesting here also about anusaya and asaya.
Asaya.
Also habit and instinct. Because I think that asaya has to be developed.
Certainly.
Instinct does not have to
yourself.
Be developed. I mean, anusaya does not have to
it's
be developed.
It's now working.
Huh?
It's now working. Chetasika or Sanghara Khanda becomes habit even right now, for the next moment, another moment.
Right. But all the unwholesome, akusala, you don't need to develop it, you don't need to do anything because it's already there.
I mean,
we can talk about a habit, but
of what?
About the habit of akusala, but it's like there's no beginning to that.
Long, long time ago, uncountable life.
But kusala, wholesomeness, there needs to be like going against the stream. In order to develop kusala, right, Ajahn?
But either way, anything, it all depends on conditions. So if more agusala behavior arises, agusala actions arise, more that sets conditions for more agusala to arise. Or the other side of the coin, more gusala that arises creates conditions for more gusala to arise. So that's basically what the difference, that's basically habits and instinct can be attributed to that.
it's not a matter of doing something to have good, because that is the idea of self again at this moment, whether kusala or akusala is conditioned to arise. It's by conditions, as Betty just mentioned, that can be understanding now, and this is what is meant by understanding for the sake of understanding, not understanding for the purpose of having more good or understanding to have more happiness. Otherwise, it's for me again. So understanding what is conditioned now is the way that kusala will develop naturally, not by trying to have more kusala.
Exactly, but through understanding correctly, kusala will naturally be developed, will arise, right? So that's understanding is a condition for kusala to arise. And
unexpectedly, but
we could say that understanding is not natural or is not instinctual. It's something that needs to be developed. That's what I mean.
Naturally.
Naturally.
Not by going to a quiet place or focusing on anything that is unnatural practice, but just by understanding more about, considering more about dharmas now, which are so anatta. So it's by the considering and understanding of dharmas now that understanding develops. Otherwise, it's the self doing something all the time.
Yeah, that's very clear. Yeah.
It's very subtle. That's why only the higher degree of panya can understand that as the self. Even thinking about dukkha, one understands it it's naturally because of the santana or habits. Otherwise, you will not think about dukkha.
You will not think about dukkha.
You can think about other things, but when time comes, you think that there is dukkha. And just pay attention to the dukkha only. What about seeing another reality?
Right, right.
So even that moment, panya knows that that's not right. Otherwise, one will cling to the dukkha.
That's an addiction. Addicted to focusing on that dukkha or that vedana.
So from now on, when there is thinking about dukkha, panya can see that why, what for. And then other reality can be object of understanding. Otherwise, it's just only that, thinking about dukkha.
Another topic, most of these topics came up when we were in Taipei and Hong Kong together. And we had some discussion about the monk's life, and there were some comments about it being quieter, and question about whether there were any responsibilities or whether it was just a matter of following the rules and whether it was a preferable way of life. So can we just hear a little more about the purpose and whether there are any responsibilities and whether there is anything advantageous in the development of the path?
So what's meant by the word bhikkhu? We have to understand that.
Someone who renounces.
Really?
In the really deep
just sense. Want to be ordained.
No, I'm talking about renouncing what appears.
So can it be lay purpose?
Of course.
Yes.
In the deep meaning, it's the one who really sees a disadvantage in samsara and the who really understands the dukkha of whatever is conditioned in the real.
So who's monk?
He who renounces.
Again, that's...
I am monk in moments only.
That's
moments,
right.
Moments,
yeah.
When I see the danger of
so there are many meaning of bhikkhu, but the real one is the person who understands or sees the danger of samsara.
And sometimes it says it's the Aryan that is the bhikkhu, really. Mm-hmm. Any Aryan who has really seen the danger and has experienced nirvana.
So is what is your question?
The point. Well, you ask the purpose.
In that case, what's the purpose of ordaining like a monk who follows 227 rules?
It's the only the person who will ordain know why, what reason.
Yeah, but according to the Dhamma Vinaya, what's the correct reason?
Because the one who understands the teachings and know oneself, that can one develop an understanding by becoming a monk or just lay people? Who knows? You know yourself. Will you ordain or not? Or you can understand the teachings anytime, anywhere.
Oh, that's my question. I think you can understand the teachings anywhere. So in that case, why should one ordain? Why does the order exist, the order of monks?
So we can say for the others, why? Because someone doesn't have any understanding of the teachings at all, just want to be a monk.
But does there have to be a purpose? I mean, people ask, what's the purpose of life? But there is no purpose. There's a reason why we are in samsara. But anyway, as far as becoming a monk is concerned, it's a different way of life, isn't it, to that of the householder?
What's the benefit? So it has to have benefit.
It says in the teachings that for these people, the household life has become dusty. They're seen as being full of dust and so forth. So they see the futility and despair of household life. So it's not ordaining for a purpose, not becoming monk for a purpose, but for a reason.
I mean, you see the dustiness of it, and then why do you become a monk? I mean, lay people can also see the dustiness of it, and
I don't think so. Not in the same way.
But what's wrong with dustiness in terms of developing Dhamma? Why should you run away from dustiness or
it's
whatever?
It's like an adult, for example, living only with a group of children who they cannot relate to in the same way as those people relate to each other. So it's just like in lay life, one outgrows certain things as one proceeds through life. For some people, they have outgrown the household life. And for them, the purity of the ordained life, the monk's life, is the life they naturally incline to.
I think that sometimes you mention it's for those who naturally can live the life of an arahat, who, because it's like heaven and earth, it's a totally different kind of lifestyle. So for the one who can very naturally follow the rules without any disturbance or difficulty and who live like an arahat.
But it was seen right from the very beginning that the monks could not do this, and this is why they had came up with the rules. The commentary that goes along with the Vinaya.
That's very obvious,
but the problem,
if you're not an arahat, how can you naturally
Yeah, exactly,
like an
because
arahat.
They're not arahats. So I think, and the fact that it's not necessary to be a monk, but it was felt at that time that the strongest attachments that one has is to one's family, so that giving up the attachments to a family was a big disattachment in their eyes. But in actual fact, when a person decides he wants to go live in a monastery, he's basically adopting another family.
The point is that if one cannot follow all those rules, then it creates a lot of harm, a lot of akusala karma, and destroys the teachings. And if one can follow but is very disturbed and it's very difficult, then it's a hindrance. There's no point in living
that life. Well, that's why they leave the monkhood, Sarah. So
there's no point in remaining a monk or becoming a monk if one cannot follow those rules.
I'm thinking about people who have the level of understanding that sees the danger of sensuous attachment to the five senses and to the mind, and having seeing that happen on a daily basis in the life of a householder, and he has some level of understanding of the Dharma, and therefore he's motivated to become a monk. Because becoming a monk, he does not, he has to eat one meal, he has to, and all these rules are encouraging of him being more mindful and having more kusala. So can we say that's one good reason to become a monk?
Only one.
Mm-hmm. And the other would be one reason. And the other one would be someone who's
only one point.
Only one point.
Yeah.
But Ajahn, my question is that the life of a monk is the life that that would be natural for an arahat.
Certainly, because the arahata cannot live household life anymore.
Right. So that means that anybody who is not an arahat, if he becomes a monk, if he ordains like a monk, he's living an unnatural life, a way of life which is not natural.
And actually, it's the way to destroy the teachings. For the monks today, no understanding. So is that the way to destroy the teachings?
Yeah, of course. So that means that the monk life is only for arahats.
Or those who have nature to become arahata.
Or at any stage of life.
So you factor... Roti, you can factor in the rules. Those who can follow the rules with ease, with understanding, even though they're not arahats.
That's the reason why one becomes monk. Because one can become enlightened anywhere, anytime, as a household person.
And another related question that came up was, what are the responsibilities of a monk?
To understand the teachings and to follow the Vinaya.
Just that.
If there is no understanding, why become a monk?
Not necessarily any responsibility to share or anything else, just to understand and follow.
The only reason.
What about Bindabad? Is that a responsibility?
Follow the Vinaya.
Different topic. My topic this time. Last time we had some discussion about sasankarika and asankarika cheetahs, which are prompted or weak cheetahs and unprompted or strong cheetahs. And you mentioned that we need to also consider about jhana cheetahs. So I looked at the detail of the references in the Abhidhamma, because one would assume that jhana cheetahs would be asankarika or strong, but from the Abhidhammata Vibhavani, it basically says that they cannot be considered either as sasankarika or asankarika. It says, for it's not possible to state here that jhana is prompted when obtained by the way of the practice of calm meditation alone, and unprompted when it's obtained by the way of the attainment of the path. is it not possible? It's not so, since jhana that is obtained powerfully, satito, by way of the attainment of the path, later occurs also by way of preparatory meditation, samatha bhavana. Therefore, it is not possible to say either that jhana is unprompted, since it does not arise by just because of the roots at birth, adhikara, alone, in the absence of prior practice, abhisamkara, which are known as the preparation for all jhana, or that it is prompted, since it does not arise by the preparatory practice, abhisamkara, alone, without the roots at birth, the adhikara. So it's quite interesting. Alternatively, jhana is not said to be unprompted, as the unprompted state is never found in that which arises as a result of prior practice, nor in the absence of any special significance is it said to be prompted.
Because the jhana is not different. There is no sasankara and asankara of jhana at all. But in the sense that, only that sense, it cannot arise without the development, which is kama vajra. The kama vajra citta has to arise before moment of jhana.
I see. Because here it just talked about, it sounded like general, but there you're talking about the actual citta beforehand, the kama vajra citta beforehand. So,
but it's right to say that there's no sangsara or asankara.
Yes. Yes. So that's why a term like the asankarika or sasankarika, we have to consider deeply. It's not just a matter of strong or weak. So like in this example, it also depends on the cheetahs that arise beforehand.
Right.
Because I think you had mentioned that it cannot be said to be asankarika, but it can't be referred to as sasankarika either. Mm-hmm. We were discussing before you came in a question that Venerable Bodhi asked us about, which Robert shared and which I replied to, but it's a very detailed technical point, but I'll try to mention it because you may have a comment. So it's actually referring to passage in the Visuddhimagga, which refers to rebirth linking consciousness. I think in this particular context it was referring to rebirth linking in the Arupa Brahma realm, which may or may not have some significance. And it was talking about the nama-rupa in paticca-samuppada conditioning the six ayatanas. So here the nama in context is referring to chetasikas, which arise with patisandhi citta and other vipaka cittas in life. And it mentions how mentality, those chetasikas, are a condition in seven ways at minimum for the salayatana, for example, the citta, first by connaissance, then mutuality, support, association, karma, vipaka, paccaya, presence, and non-disappearance for that citta, for the manayatana. And then it mentions that in addition, some chetasikas are also a condition as hetu paccaya. For example, aloba, amoha can be a condition as hetu paccaya, and some as ahara paccaya. So here it would be referring to pasa and chetana. And it says in this way there is a maximum of conditions and a minimum, so implying that the maximum is including these extra two and the minimum without them, just the seven. His question is, But what about other pachya that must be operating at that time, such as indriya pachya, faculty condition, magga pachya, path condition, and jhana pachya, jhana condition? So, yes, at moments of rebirth, for example, there is Vedana, so Vedana is always indriya pachya, as I understand, for the associated chetasikas and citta, and there must be vitaka and jhana factors operating as jhana pachya and magga pachya, such as panya at that moment of rebirth consciousness and vipaka. So my response is that it may not mention all the conditions, but the other conditions must be implied, even though maybe it means there should be some dots, but the other conditions are there. But is there any reason you can think of why they're not mentioned, why only some are mentioned?
What about one citta at a time? If we talk about pachya, like seeing.
Yes.
What about those pachyas?
Yes.
What about aramana pachya, common to all cittas?
Right, so there has to be aramana, but it's talking about the chetasikas that are conditioned, but chetasika can be the object, so even of the patisanti citta, the chetasika could be the...
I don't think about patisanti
citta. You're talking about seeing. Well, visible object is the condition.
For so patisanti?
For seeing consciousness, yes. We don't know what the object of patisanti is. It could be anything, but for seeing now...
How many...
But here it's talking about the chetasikas that are conditioned. So it's not conditioning by aramana pachya.
But when it's the object?
Of seeing consciousness?
Cannot seeing be object?
But you said when seeing consciousness arises.
It experience only visible
object.
Visible
object, so, sure. So then chetasika isn't aramana pachya.
That's why we have to talk about one citta at a time.
Yes, so for seeing consciousness, when it arises, the chetasika cannot be the aramana.
What about jhana pachya? At moment of seeing. See, we have to think about one citta at a time and talk about the details of pachya.
No, not at moment of seeing. No jhana pachya when the seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching.
And what about the magga pachya?
No, not at the moment
of seeing. See, that's why we learn to understand that seeing has only 7 chetasikas.
Yes.
And then we can talk about pachya of those 7 chetasikas. Yes. What are there?
Yes.
It's not necessary to understand that in details about each citta. But we know that what is meant by aramana pachya, hetu pachya, magga pachya, and so on.
But there must be vedana pachya at that moment of seeing by, so there must be indriya pachya at that moment of seeing, because
does it appear? Does it appear?
No. Roti might say it does, but
yeah.
Vedana at the moment of seeing doesn't
just
appear.
Think about that which is now appearing.
Yeah. So in other words, the point is that it depends on each vipaka citta. So at the moment of seeing there's no jhana pachya, magga pachya, but there is indriya pachya, but they don't have to mention each.
What is the point pachya of understanding this?
The point is just to clarify any doubts, but actually there's no point in just clarifying for the sake of book knowledge doubts. It's really to understand the reality now. That's the point,
and
as anatta.
And it's I who know.
Yes. And the point is really just to understand, just to know that at each moment of seeing or hearing in any other reality, it's arising by many different conditions, and one can begin to understand what they are. Just
and what about understand all these and then go to meditation center?
Yes, well, that's the point. Mm-hmm. Or if one knows all these but still thinks there can be awareness or sitting or standing, then
or walking,
yeah, then it's mm-hmm quite useless. Yes.
So, Sarah, conclusion is the mention of those particular Pachaya is just example, that there are many,
what I mentioned is that these other Pachaya sometimes condition those Vipaka cheetahs, but whether or not it's mentioned in that context or not, so I think that what I wrote was okay.
Yeah. Then what's the use of understand all about Pachaya?
Yes. Well, there's no point if it doesn't lead to any understanding of what appears now. But by hearing and considering and reflecting more about Pachaya, the purpose is just to understand that dhammas are anatta, that no one can make anything happen. It's totally useless to focus on any object or just think about dukkha or vedana or anything else. So it's actually all for the understanding of reality.
And it will condition moment of understanding the second vipassana.
Yeah.
Not yeah. by knowing the words.
No, yeah. But by understanding at this moment. Yeah.
It develops by itself all the time, unknowingly, even talking about Pachaya, just for the sake of there is the understanding firmer and firmer about there is no self at all.
It becomes clearer and clearer that how detailed it is, how each reality arises, how extraordinary it has to be this way because of these different complicated conditions. So any yeah. idea of doing something by instinct or not, or how it cannot be anything other than just citta, cetasika and rupa arising by conditions now.
No matter how much there is the understanding of Pachaya, it's useless if there's no understanding of this moment.
Achan just mentioned the second vipassanayana.
Pachaya, parikhayana. The first one is nama, rupa, parichetayana. And the second one is Pachaya, parikhayana.
Oh, I see.
Before there can be the understanding directly of a reality right now, when they appear just one at a time, because now so many realities arise and fall away unknowingly. But from hearing and understanding that there is no self, no matter one heard, it brought about later the idea of letting go.
So if there's not a very clear and firm and direct understanding about nama and rupa, namas and rupas and the distinction, then there cannot be a clear understanding of the conditioned nature of those namas and rupas, which is the second vipassana.
And it has to be daily life, and it has to be anytime, anywhere, by conditions. Otherwise, there cannot be letting go the idea of self, because I look for it.
So your answer to the Venerable would be just however much knowledge or understanding of conditions there is, this it's useless if there's no understanding at this moment.
In the teachings on conditions, that points out the presence of certain conditions and not others, because for the purpose of showing maybe function of the citta or manifestation?
To understand clearly and clearly or more about citta, cetasika and rupa.
No, what I'm thinking is the example that Sarah brought up about the different pachayas in patisanti citta. There are so many pachayas, but not all is mentioned in the text. Is it because Maybe at that moment, to show the function of patisanti, it's showing only certain pachayas?
No, sir. Mm-hmm.
So it's just an example.
Right.
That there are these and more.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's pointing to the main ones that always condition, like the association and the mutuality always condition each vipaka citta, such as seeing or hearing, but like the Magapachya and the Janapachya only condition some vipaka cheetahs, like some patisandhi, but not moments of seeing and hearing. So pointing to the main ones, I think. I mentioned to you that I was listening to an old tape the other day, which we're editing an old set from quite a long time ago, and from 1980. And on that you were referring to chanda as being satisfied, whereas now we would use interested. So
any word.
Any word, yes. Mm-hmm. But it's quite interesting to reflect about the meaning of so. When it's kusala citta at that moment, chanda is interested in what is experienced or satisfied with what is experienced in a wholesome sense. So,
why only wholesome?
If it's kusala citta, if there's understanding, for example, but if it's with attachment, then it's satisfied in an unwholesome sense. Because usually we would think of those words, satisfied and interested, as quite a different meaning, but chanda as being satisfied with the object is an interesting point to consider.
I'm thinking maybe Jan's English improved since then. She's become more seeing the, maybe she wasn't very clear about the word satisfied at that time.
No, I wouldn't say that.
I think that it doesn't depend on word, but the understanding and thinking over and over again.
So why would chanda be associated with satisfaction? Why? How is it satisfied?
What about interest?
Interest seems more
satisfied?
Understandable. Satisfied.
When one's interested in a sound, for example, that's heard, or a topic that's being discussed, isn't one satisfied with that topic? Isn't it the one that is the object of interest?
But we know that because satisfaction seemed to only be associated with attachment, not with aversion, whereas chanta arises with aversion also.
Mm-hmm.
Chanta arises with aversion also. Mm-hmm. So would you say that satisfied?
Just want to be angry.
Just want to be angry.
At that moment, if there's no chanda, there wouldn't be anger.
So it's easier to use the word in like interested in anger, in being angry. Right. Yeah.
And this is actually because I was experimenting with the use, because it does have another sense in English. It's like contented, like in the court of law, the judge is satisfied with the evidence or the answers. It doesn't mean that he's attached to it. It just means he's content with what is heard. He accepts it. So I mentioned another example, developing understanding and being content with what is conditioned at this moment, no matter it's kusala, kusala, or whatever reality. And I said being content or satisfied with what is conditioned now. But a friend said, you cannot talk about being satisfied with what is unsatisfactory. And he said it sounded like attachment, but there is that meaning of being accepted or content with what is conditioned. So in that sense, it can be satisfied with whatever is conditioned, not wishing for it to be another object, not wishing for it to be more wholesome or more good, but just accepting or being satisfied now.
But then again, if you use that particular explanation with dosa mulichitas, it's not really satisfied, is it? It's trying to push away the object.
It has to be.
You mean for chanda, you mean now, or being
said, don't mind what the object is.
Another way to understand chanda is that chanda does not arise with the ahetuka citta at all, because no selection.
And I think that's why we need to hear about all kinds of conditions, because mm-hmm. sometimes we talk about something which is actually there's another reality, another chetasika having another function, which we kind of mix up many of those functions. For example, just now we are talking about alopa with panya, but alopa is not there with akusla citta. It seems when we are talking about being content, when it's panya, somewhere there we can appreciate that because of alopa also, mm-hmm. Right?
So when at moments of kusala or moments of understanding in particular, there is alopa, there is the opposite of attachment, so it is content, it is satisfied with what appears at that moment, not wishing for it to be any other object, even if that the object experienced is drunken attachment or whatever it is. It's conditioned and it's anatta.
That's why we can understand how many citta doesn't have a chanda with it. How many? That will be no question anymore when there's understanding. How many? Easy to understand. All ahetuka and
two
mohas. No selection at all.
No interest in an object at those times.
Impossible to have chanda when there are conditions to see. Would you like to be satisfied with moha, content? No.
Well, if it's that's a good point. If there is panya with moha as object, then at that moment.
Chanda with panya, not with moha.
Chanda with panya, then yes, but with cannot be with moha.
That's the problem. So when you ask like that, then people don't refer to the moment itself. They tend to think, I can bliss of ignorance, so they're happy not to know. So we're talking about another chitta.
They have chanda. They have chanda not to know.
Not to know. But what you're saying is that at the moment of ignorance itself, there cannot be chanda.
Anyone would like to be satisfied?
No interest or no. So no satisfaction with the object at all. And at the moment of seeing and hearing, going back to what we were discussing before, so at that moment of seeing and hearing, there's no interest in the object, and the Vedana is indifferent feeling, but it's still, as we mentioned, Indriya Pachya for the Citta and Chetasikas, it still has a governing role or leading role. By so in what way does that indifferent feeling that arises with seeing and the other six Chetasikas have a governing role? What exactly is meant?
It does mean that it's the same feeling when it arises with kusala or with panya. So can it be indriya as moment of understanding?
No, different, but still
but anyway,
it's indriya because it's
indriya,
Vedana.
What is indriya? It means that which can be, or it is, Vedana itself is
indriya.
Not other chetasika.
Yes. So it just means that it is, even at that moment when it's indifferent feeling with that weak citta, it is still a strong or leading.
Because at that moment it governs
the other citta seekers and the citta.
Mm. To have such feeling, not other feeling.
Yes. It's good to consider this example because in order to understand more about indriya, because usually we don't think of that example, we think of the pleasant feeling with attachment or the pleasant feeling with understanding, but even that indifferent weak feeling with that weak citta is indriya.
And what else is indriya at moment of seeing?
The eye.
Eye sense.
And what else?
Oh, concentration. Ekagata.
So we can see that they are different, even it's the same cetasika. It, in its own way. Is there Indriya now?
Yes, at every moment.
Mm-hmm. Weak or strong.
One only has to think of the example of Vedana, which arises of every single cheetah, to understand how there must be Indriya at every moment.
In each instant, the Indriya governs, perform that function, governs?
Mm-hmm, because the pleasant feeling cannot arise. It has to be that Indriya.
I mean, I can understand when it's a nama, dhamma, but say for example, when it's seeing, how does eye consciousness govern? How is that?
Because without it, can they be seen?
Okay.
So the meaning of governor
also. An important factor or leader.
Leader, you know, like Indriya, Indra, the god Indra.
The god is powerful.
Why is the leader?
Because it's
powerful, it leads. That's my understanding of Chan. Indriya, like Indra, it relates to a powerful, some power.
In its own way.
I was going to use powerful, but then we have bala, but it's closely related.
Pachan, you mean in its own way, such as?
Not as nama.
Mm-hmm.
The important
rupa. You don't mean.
Eye sense is
only for seeing.
Eye sense is important.
Ear sense is for hearing. It's in its own way.
That's why they are. Indriya, five, rupa.
You also used the word indispensable, but I think what you're saying before, John, is always the understanding rather than the word.
Right. Even we use the right word, but without understanding, one might have wrong understanding.
Yeah, I wouldn't use indispensable because all cetasikas are indispensable.
Chitta. Chitta is manindriya.
Every single moment in life, because it's always a leader, it's always the
for what cetasika?
Manindriya is always the leader for the cetasikas that arise with it. It's always the leader of the namas.
Manindriya
referring to cheetahs, each cheetah.
And why is the leader?
Because the cheetah is the inner ayatana, the leader of the cetasikas, the foremost. The cetasikas are like the followers or the attendants to the king.
But it's the same the other way around, isn't it, Achan?
Like with, what?
Without the cetasikas, the chitta cannot arise.
What bhajya?
So they have different bhajyas.
What?
That's why there's many different pachyas.
Some are pachya conditioned this way, some are conditioned that way.
Just say sahajata pachya, so they condition each other.
But his question is why cetasikas, not
leader also. Yes. Because why you use the word indispensable.
Because the other cetasikas follow citta to experience the same object, which citta is the leader of experiencing. It is leader only in its own function to be the chief of experience and object only.
And Achan, we also hear that citta experiences clearly whatever the object is, whereas the other cetasikas they experience, but in their own way, not the way citta experiences it.
So there can be other indriya, not manindriya, because each citta is manindriya.
Mano,
manindriya. Mano and indriya. Manindriya.
Like the king and his ministers, the king is the leader, but he cannot perform his task without the ministers, and they each have their role, and some of them have a very important or powerful role, but they still follow his lead.
Like the contact that arises with seeing does not see, it's the chitta that sees. The feeling does not see, it just feels.
It experiences the same object, but it cannot see.
A little bit
reminds me of Sampatichana, which experiences the same object as vijnana, but it does not. In the case of Chakku Vijnana, it does not see. Can you?
But it does a function of Sampatichana.
Yeah.
So at this moment of seeing, what experiences the object?
Vijnana.
Manindriya.
Manindriya.
Yeah.
Right.
And the other chetasikas.
Other indriya, like with upekindriya.
Right. But also contacts the object and others.
Before there can be more understanding of not self at all, it needs more and more understanding of what appears now or what is there now.
So even though Sampatichana doesn't see the object, it receives the object, and the other chetasikas have their own function, so it's still the only one that actually receives that object.
And in order to experience the same object as seeing, hearing, it needs vitakka chetasika to arise with the citta which follows.
So in Sampatichana you have vitakka.
Certainly, otherwise they cannot get the same object as seeing.
Right.
So when it's seeing, it has only seven ministers, and when it's Sampatichana, it has more.
Because it's a more stronger.
So I think vitakka is like the photocopy machine, right?
In the Tipitaka, it says that vitakka is the foot of the world.
Right.
And here's a question for you, Roti, because of something you said before. What is the difference between citta, mano, and vijnana?
Same meaning.
Same, yeah. So each citta is vijnana.
In other word, what is it? Which means the same.
Oh, there are many knowledge.
Right. What are they?
Manindriya.
And?
Mano.
Nanayatana.
Oh, and?
Manak.
Hataya.
Hataya.
And?
Oh.
Hataya also.
Certainly.
But Hataya is not the rupa, no. Hataya watu.
Yeah. But the other word for mano is Hataya.
Oh, Hataya. Yeah, I know.
Without it.
And Pandara.
Clear, the one that's clear.
Is Akusala Citta Pandara?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Is it Manindriya?
Yes.
And Akusala Citta? Akusala Citta. What word for it?
Another word for it?
Akusala Citta. Another word for citta?
Another word for citta, Ajahn?
Hataya, isn't it the word for citta?
So you can say akusala hataya?
No, not that meaning, but the explanation of that word citta. What's the meaning of pandara?
Oh, the word pandara, what does it mean?
It is citta, but
to
why
know?
We use the word
pandara? Term for the akusala citta, just like we say pandara for.
So what's the meaning of pandara?
I don't. This is the first time I hear the word pandara, Chan.
Without akusala.
Pandara
means citta itself is pandara.
So the citta is.
Means
the citta is pandara. It's like clear or it's untainted, but because the chetasikas arise with it, the akusala chetasikas arise with it and taint it. So if it was just chitta of no akusala chetasikas, it wouldn't be tainted. So it, the chitta itself is pandra, but it's tainted. It's
affected because pandra means clear.
By the akusala chetasikas.
So, Jan, akusala chitta is as pandara as kusala chitta.
No matter what, chitta is pandara. Kusala or akusala, it doesn't matter. Because chitta itself cannot be akusala or kusala.
So I'm not sure it's correct. Well, previously,
Sukhin said, well, akusala jitta is as pandara as kusala jitta. But I said, well, that's not actually right because it's jitta itself that is pandara.
So that means that also the kusala chetasikas.
Any moment, any kind, its nature is pandara.
No, you were saying chetasikas.
Yeah, I'm saying that because Sarah said that the akusala chetasikas make the chitta dirty. Well, symbolically speaking, right?
So it's not that which make it dirty, chitta itself, pandara.
Because in that case it would be also about kusala chetasikas, which take away the dirtiness, the clearness, right?
Yes, but the chitta itself is pandara, but it's affected, it's conditioned by those chetasikas that arise with it.
So when we talk just about chitta, not chetasika, we can say that chitta, any kind, is pandara. It's not you. The point is that no matter whatever is there, it's not you or I or anyone.
Akusala chittas are not pabhasara, they're pandara, but not pabhasara, which means luminous or bright. Both these terms are used, pandara and pabhasara. Pabhasara refers to the chitta, the one that is bright or light. But it cannot be used for akusala chittas.
You have the abhasara gods.
What about while one is fast asleep?
Pabhasara,
because not tainted by akusala and pandara.